You're listening to the weekly teaching podcast of Willamette Christian Church in Westland, Oregon. We hope that what you hear today inspires you to laugh, question, think, and grow. If you'd like to connect with us even further, hit us up online at willamette.cc or shoot us a direct message on Instagram or Facebook. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy this week's episode.
Happy Mother's Day to all you mothers, caregivers, anyone who fills that space in someone's life. Happy Mother's Day. We love you, we believe in you, and we honor you this morning. If you're new here or just joining us, welcome. And if we haven't had a chance to meet yet, my name is Marty. I'm the student's pastor at Beaverton Christian Church, where I get the privilege of working with middle school and high school students. And if you're new or just joining us, you picked a great week to come, as we're wrapping up our Come As You Are series. And so what we've seen in this series is many of us suffer with this false impression that if Jesus were here today, he probably wouldn't like us. And that's because we're far too messy or far too hurt, or we have a past that we carry with us, or we're too cynical. But when we examine the scriptures, what we see is that the people that Jesus loved spending time with and gravitated towards the most were the people who didn't have it all together. And the people that Jesus didn't spend as much time with were the people who pretended like they did. And that's good news for all of us, because there's only one person who has it all together, and his name is Jesus. And so this idea that if Jesus were here today, he wouldn't like me, it actually doesn't come from the Bible. We can come as we are. We can come hurt. We can come messy. We can come with a past. And what we're gonna look at today is that we can come cynical. Everybody say cynical.
Cynical.
And what we're gonna see is that when Jesus shows up, he loves to surprise us with hope and satisfy our cynicism. So what are you cynical about? I'll never forget growing up, I grew up in a very technologically savvy family, and we frequented trips to the electronics store if it was to buy a new computer part or fix a broken one. And whenever we went to the store, my brother, we'd love to go to the video game section to browse for a new game to take home. And occasionally, if we saved up enough allowance and my parents were willing to throw in a few extra bucks, we could come home with a brand new video game. But I'll never forget when my brother and I realized that instead of waiting until the weekend when my parents had the time to take us to the store where we could actually buy a game, we could just order a game online or through a magazine and they would ship it directly to our house, directly to our door. So the next time I had enough money, I went onto the interwebs and I ordered a game, and then the waiting began. And I'll never forget the feeling of excitement I had in those first few days, the anticipation of this game finally arriving. I remember a few days later, I was walking home from school and I was telling my friends, hey, I bet you it's gonna be waiting for me the second I get home. It's gonna be at my doorstep. And as I walked up to the mailbox when I got home, I just had this bright hope, this anticipation with full confidence that when I opened that mailbox, there would be a game in it. And so I walked up to the mailbox and I opened it up to see what was inside, but all I found were bills addressed to my parents, magazine subscriptions, and letters. But I thought, no worries. Sure enough, it'll come. It's only been a few days. I'm sure the company, maybe they just took an extra day to ship it, or it's in transit and it's on its way right now. But sure enough, it'll arrive. I just gotta wait a few more days. Well, a few days later, I checked the mailbox again, equally excited, equally anticipating this package arriving, but equally disappointed when I opened it up to find more letters addressed to my parents. Then a week went by, and my parents took us to the mall. And when we got to the mall, my brother and I, we went into the game store, and I looked there on the shelf, and they had a copy of the game that I had ordered. It was sitting there right on the shelf. And I picked it up, and I held the box in my hand, and I turned it over and admired the box art. And I thought, oh, it'd be so amazing if I could just buy this right here and take it home. But I couldn't, because I had already bought it. I was just waiting for it to arrive to my house. And at this moment, I started to feel a little disillusioned. My little mind started to think, you know, who is this Amazon company anyway? I mean, how reputable are they? And can they really bring the package to my house on time? And what about the postal service? I mean, maybe they messed up the shipment and maybe it's lost and it'll never show up to my house. And I started to feel disappointment. And that day when we got home from the mall, I looked over at the mailbox and I was about to walk over and check, but something in me stopped and all of a sudden I felt sick to my stomach. I actually felt anxiety at the thought of opening that mailbox and the disappointment that I would feel if the game still wasn't there. And so I paused for a moment and I waited before opening the box. And finally, after a few moments, I worked up the courage, but I could only open it just slightly, just to peek in the top. I didn't want to look all the way as though that would change what was actually in the box. I was afraid of what I would find. And sure enough, I looked in and there was only one letter. And I tried to think, well, is the game big enough to fit in that letter? I don't think so. It's still not there. And in that moment, I gave up. I decided, and I figured out that this mailbox had hurt me too deep. It had cut me deep. But I could protect myself from the hurt of the mailbox and the disappointment I felt every time I opened it if I just stopped checking. By not looking and by lowering and adjusting my expectations, I became invulnerable from ever being hurt by that mailbox again. So I just stopped looking. And in that moment, I grew cynical. And this is what can happen to all of us when we get our hopes dashed. When we believed that someone or something would come through and it didn't, so we lowered our expectations and we adjusted our mind to think, I don't want to ever be hurt again. And cynicism sets in. Cynicism is this idea that I know too much and I've seen too much to be that naive again. I've seen too much of the world. I've heard enough exaggerated claims and empty political promises. I've heard people offer their thoughts and prayers. And I've been around long enough to explore some of these offers of opportunity, of hope, to know that they will always fail. They'll always let me down. And so if you've been around long enough, at some point, you probably trusted in someone and they let you down. Maybe it was a friend who told you, I'll always be there for you. And then they left. Or maybe it was a parent who said, I'll be there at your baseball game. And at the game, you kept checking the stands to see their smiling face, but you never saw them. So now when you play baseball, you just keep your eye on the ball. You gave up looking. Or maybe you're a Blazers fan and you're not even gonna watch the game today for fear of being hurt. Hey, I used to be a Blazers fan and I know that this last game was the most watched sporting event in Portland history, which is amazing. But if you've been burned by the Blazers, I just wanna say I'm from San Diego. And the Chargers left us a long time ago when it comes to football, so I know what it's like to be hurt in the sports world. But you've been let down, so you just stop believing instead of holding on to that feeling. And who are these streetlight people? I don't know who they are. But we need to hold on to hope. And see, cynicism, sometimes it's simply an honest reaction to the real events to us that have happened in our life. And so we all want hope. We live in a world where we want to believe. But when we become let down and we grow older and we grow wiser and we have the opportunity to explore some of these claims of hope that are offered to us, we know better than to open up and be hurt by them again. So we all know when we see the infomercial for the belt, the magical weight loss belt that you put on where you can sit there on the couch and eat a candy bar and grow a six pack, we know that's probably not true. And we know that if we buy the miracle yard treatment, it's not gonna turn our yard from a yard of weeds to a paradise overnight. And so we grow older, we grow wiser, and we protect ourselves from being taken advantage of or lied to, and we close ourselves off from being hurt, but we also close ourselves off from the opportunity of being surprised by hope. And this is what cynicism does. Cynicism can stop us from being surprised by hope. Sure, it protects us and closes us off from disappointment and hurt, but it can also close the door to the possibility of experiencing what it was that we really wanted in the first place. Maybe it was love. Maybe it was acceptance. Maybe it was a relationship. Hope keeps the door open, but cynicism keeps the door closed. When I was growing up and I stopped checking that mailbox. In that moment, I had stopped myself from being hurt by the mailbox ever again, but I also stopped myself from the joy of the possibility of being surprised by that game arriving. Because it was only a week later when I was sitting in my room and my parents called out, they said, "Hey, Marty, your package has arrived." And I thought, oh yeah, right. It's probably just my Mad Magazine subscription or something like that. And they said, "No, Marty, I really think you should come check it out. The package has your name on it. I think it's your game." And I walked into the kitchen and sure enough, there it was. And I had realized in that moment that my cynicism had stopped me from experiencing the surprise of seeing that new game. And this takes us to our passage today from the Bible, where we're gonna look at someone who's been deeply bitten by cynicism. His name is Thomas. And Thomas was one of the first 12 followers of Jesus. And Thomas had left everything to follow Jesus, and he had put all of his hope and trust in Jesus to make a better life, to change everything. But then Thomas watched this Jesus be accused and be put on trial and eventually be crucified. And then Jesus died. And now this Jesus, who was the one who ignited this hope in Thomas, is gone. See, Thomas had seen Jesus do things that no one had ever done before. Jesus could heal the sick. He could make the lame walk. He could open blind eyes. He could turn water into wine. He could walk on water. He could even raise the dead, as Thomas saw Jesus raise Lazarus up from the grave. But now Jesus isn't there anymore. And to make matters even worse, all of Thomas's friends are going around sharing that this Jesus who was dead is now alive. And the whole city of Jerusalem is just ablaze with the news that the one who was dead is now risen. And all of Thomas's closest friends are claiming that they saw Jesus. "Yeah, I saw Jesus. He appeared to me. Thomas, you weren't there. I'm sorry you weren't there. But we were all together and he showed up. And I promise you, he's alive. We've seen him. There's hope." And Thomas is thinking, "Yeah, right. I've believed in miracles long enough than to believe that dead people can come back, unless it's Jesus performing the miracle, and guess what? He's gone." And so Thomas, as he's listening to all these claims, he's just sitting there in silence thinking, and he's cynical. And we pick it up. I invite you to turn there with me. John chapter 20, verse 24. We read the account of Thomas and his interaction with Jesus as Jesus shows up to satisfy his cynicism and surprise him with hope. In John chapter 20, verse 24, we read this. He said, "Now one of the 12 disciples, Thomas, nicknamed the twin, was not with the others when Jesus came. They told him, 'We have seen the Lord.' But he replied, 'I won't believe it unless I see the nail wounds in his hands, put my fingers into them, and place my hand into the wound in his side.'" Thomas reacts to the disciples' faith in Jesus in the same way somebody who had a terminal illness and had accepted their fate would react to news of some miracle treatment. Yeah, right. Jesus rose from the dead. Come on, physical proof, please. Unless I see it, I won't believe it. I want to actually put my hand in the holes in his hand where the nails went and into his side where he was pierced with a spear. And until that happens, those are my conditions of my cynicism that need to be met in order for me to believe. I need to see it with my own eyes. And Thomas is in this place because his expectation and his hopes have been dashed. He's now lowered his expectation about Jesus, and now doubt is settling in, and he's wondering if anything he's heard about Jesus is true, if the hope that he was once offered is really real. So he says, "Hey, I need to see it to believe it." And then 8 days go by. 8 days go by and still nothing. Thomas doesn't see, so Thomas doesn't believe. And right there is when doubt starts to settle in. See, doubt is the external outgrowth of inward cynicism. It's the external outgrowth of inner cynicism. When we're cynical, we think, "I know the truth. People will always let you down. The church will always let you down. Friends will always let you down. And because I know this truth from experience, the outgrowth of me knowing this is that I doubt anyone will show up or come through. This is why we say things like, I doubt there's a good partner out there for me. I doubt there's a good friend out there for me. I doubt there's anything positive to Christianity or church. Because when I showed up, I just met mean, grumpy, arrogant, bossy, proud people. So this must just be what it is. Now I doubt there's anything out there for me. We've been let down, so we grow cynical, and then doubt settles in. And this is Thomas. He has been severely let down. He's become cynical, and now he is doubting the hope he once had in Jesus. But then in the midst of Thomas's doubt and cynicism, Jesus shows up. And I love this about Jesus. Jesus loves to show up in our life unannounced, unplanned, locked behind closed doors, and satisfy our greatest need and our greatest desire and surprise us with hope. And so Jesus shows up in Thomas's life. And in verse 26, we read this. 8 days later, the disciples were together again. And this time, Thomas was with them. The doors were locked. But suddenly, as before, Jesus was standing among them. Peace be with you, he said. Then he said to Thomas, put your finger here and look at my hand. Put your hand into the wound in my side. Don't be faithless any longer. Believe. My Lord and my God, Thomas exclaimed. Then Jesus told him, you believe because you have seen me? Blessed are those who believe without seeing me. I love this story. Jesus just shows up unannounced, unplanned, behind closed doors to satisfy his cynicism and surprise him with hope. See, I believe no one plans to become a cynic. We grow into one. But in the same way, no one plans on becoming a Christian. It's the unplanned, unannounced appearing of Jesus in our life that satisfies our greatest need. And what's so amazing is that Jesus already knew exactly what Thomas needed as a condition to his faith. Thomas had laid it out previously. Here's my conditions. I need to put my hands in his hands. I need to put my hand in his side. And then Jesus, without hearing that, he already knows and he shows up and offers Thomas the very thing. Thomas, I know what you need and I know what you wanted from me that you didn't get. So here it is. Here's the offer. I am offering you the opportunity to satisfy your cynicism. Here's my hands. Here's my side. Jesus knew. And what this means is that Jesus knows why you and I are cynical. He knows our past experiences that have hurt us, the people and the places that have let us down, the reasons why we're guarded, the reasons why we closed up, why we stopped trusting, why we stopped believing. He knows all of these reasons. He knows why we doubt, and he invites you and I with an offer of opportunity to explore those very things and have them satisfied. And he does it in the most perfect, surprising way that we all need. This means God's not afraid of our questions. He's not afraid of our questions. So often I think we assume that the more faith we have, the less questions we will have. As though the only people who become Christians are the super saints with super faith who have no questions, no doubts. They've had a perfect life. No one's ever hurt them. They've never been messy. They've always had it together. And that's why you have faith in Jesus. And that's why you're here, because you've never had any questions. You're just, yep, there's Jesus. I believe and I carry no baggage with me into this. There's no mess. I'm just a super saved Christian. Said no one ever. But we think it. And we think that because we have doubts and questions, that there must be something wrong with us. But listen, Jesus is not surprised by your cynicism. He knows why you and I are cynical, and he offers to satisfy our cynicisms. This is where we see that our doubt doesn't have to be the enemy of our faith. Doubt's not the enemy of faith. So often, doubt is an essential ingredient to our faith. Doubt can be an essential part of our journey on our way into a relationship with God if we have an environment where we can ask those questions and explore those opportunities to say, I want to learn about Jesus. That's why as a church, this is us as a church. We exist so that people can be inspired to know, love, and follow Jesus. And so often that takes place in an environment, a safe place for somebody to come and just express their questions and say, here's where I'm at. I don't have it all together. I don't have all the answers. I'm not certain about this Jesus thing. In fact, there's a lot of things that happen in my life that would make me guarded, but I'm open to the possibility of being surprised by hope, and they show up and Jesus changes everything. This is the good news of the gospel. So if you've ever thought, church isn't for me, I have too many questions, I'm too cynical, I have too many doubts, I couldn't show up to a place like this. Listen, you're in good company. Welcome. We are so glad you're here. You can come as you are. This is a place for you to be inspired to know, love, and follow Jesus. You can come as you are. You can come cynical. Now, there's a traditional reading of this story. We can get an amen there, by the way. Come on now. Come on now. Jesus is so good. There's a traditional reading of this story that's depicted in this painting. And it's how I typically think of this story when I read about Thomas. And in the painting, you see Jesus, he gives this offer to Thomas. Thomas, put your hands in my hand, put your hand in my side. And then Thomas does. He puts his finger in the side. And then Thomas exclaims, my Lord and my God. As if to say, it wasn't until Thomas got the physical proof, until he moved from cynic to calling on Jesus as his savior. But in the text, if we read it, and I'll read it again, I want you to listen and see the story possibly in a new light. In verse 27, we read again, Jesus said to Thomas, put your finger here. See my hands and put out your hand and place it in my side. Do not disbelieve, but believe. Then Thomas answered him, my Lord and my God. See, nothing in the text actually indicates that Thomas physically put his hands in Jesus' side. It was as though Jesus showed up behind locked doors, unplanned, unannounced, knew exactly what Thomas needed, offered to satisfy what Thomas needed, but he didn't need it. It was as though the offer itself was enough to move Thomas from doubting and being cynical to having faith, saving faith that would cry out, Jesus, you're my Lord and you're my God. This is the power of the offer of opportunity, the offer of opportunity that Jesus extends to each of us. And this is the offer of opportunity that we have as the church to extend to the whole world. And this is beautiful because it's what so many people need. So many of us, we don't need to have every question answered, every I dotted, every T crossed, to have it all figured out. What we just need is an environment where we feel safe to explore our questions, to explore Jesus, and to express our cynicism, where we feel comfortable asking the tough questions. And these things serve to break down the walls in our life. So the walls that we put up, they crumble. And this is our church, and this is our goal, and this is why we exist. This is what we mean when we say, you and I can come as we are. We can come messy, we can come with the past, we can come hurt, and we can come cynical. And when people actually show up, we will walk with you and walk with one another on our journey wherever it takes us. It's because you and I are the hands and feet of Jesus. Jesus shows up to satisfy our cynicism, and then he sends us out in the same way to be that for other people, to have that kind of grace, that kind of warm, welcoming attitude towards others, to be that inviting for other people, to our neighbors, to our friends, to our families. This is who we are. We are people who create spaces and places and environments where the surprising appearance of Jesus can come to us in our moments of waiting, where Jesus can show up and satisfy our greatest need. This is who we are as God's people, and this is the offer of opportunity. And so often this starts, coming as you are, it starts with knowing God isn't disappointed in us. God's not disappointed in you. What I think so often and what many of us think is that God's disappointed in us and people are disappointed in us because of our mess, because of our hurt, because of our questions, because of our doubts, because of our cynicisms. And that the reasons why we're cynical, God's disappointed in that too. And because of that, it makes us want to keep quiet. It makes us want to close off and not share what we really think or what's really going on in our hearts with anyone for fear of disappointing them or for fear of feeling shame or to be rejected. So we can become inwardly focused afraid to open up, afraid to trust. And maybe even we blame other people in our life for making us this way, or maybe even blame God. But here's what we see in this story. Jesus gives Thomas the same opportunity he gives us. And it's the chance to change our mind about Jesus. It's the chance to open up about hope. It's the chance to be willing to let Jesus surprise us. It's as if Jesus is asking Thomas, Thomas, are you willing to let me surprise you? Are you willing to change your mind about me? And then Jesus created the perfect environment for Thomas to do exactly that, where he didn't need to completely change his mind and have it all figured out in 8 days. He just needed to be willing to explore the possibility. So this is the offer we extend to the world. Come as you are. Now, if you're here and you don't consider yourself a follower of Jesus, you don't consider yourself a Christian, this is our encouragement to you. Come as you are. We are so glad that you are here, that you trusted us enough to spend your Sunday morning here to explore this together, that you walked into these doors not knowing how you would be welcomed or treated, and yet you're here now. And we want to say thank you for that. And we want to let you know this is a safe place for you as you're starting your journey and your relationship with God, and you're seeing what this all means. And we would encourage you to keep coming as you are, that well beyond this Come As You Are series, you would continue to come, to continue to explore, to continue to be inspired to know, love, and follow Jesus. You can come as you are. We're so glad that you're here, and God knows exactly why you're here, and you can belong here before you believe. This is a place for you. And if you're here today and you're a Christian who follows Jesus and you consider this church to be your home and your family, two things. The first would be an encouragement to you to continue to come as you are. Continue to come as you are. And second, a question, how are you helping others come as they are? That you and I, we would help other people come as they are. So for me, I grew up in a family where we went to church occasionally. We called ourselves Creasters, right? Christmas and Easter only. And occasionally we would go to church on the weekends, and I have memories growing up of my daddy kind of like screech into the church parking lot and pull into the parking space backwards, so when church was out, we could just bolt out of there and get on with our life. And I just remember sitting in church, and occasionally you'd get those signs that church was about to end, and in our church, there was a bell that would ring. And so I'd be listening for that bell the whole time. I'm like, come on, here comes the bell. And then you'd hear the bell ring, and I'd just get up and run over to the place where there was a lady who gave out donuts. But she'd only give out half a donut, you see. And so I would always say, can I have the full donut? No, you get half a donut. And I was like, come on, give me the full donut. I'd grab half a donut, and we'd leave, and that was my church experience. And so when my brother and I got a little older, we decided, you know what, this is just not for us. We're just not going to go to church anymore. And we didn't until my first year of college. In my first year of college, I got invited to go back to church. And I was really hesitant. I didn't want to go. Not only did I have a past, I had a present. I was presently in a lifestyle that was in complete opposition to everything that I thought God was and everything that I thought religion was about. And I wanted nothing to do with it. But they said, hey, I'll buy you coffee. And I said, great, let's do it. I'll meet you there. Bought me a coffee and I came in. And I'll tell you, when I walked in those doors and I was greeted and I was welcomed and I was accepted just as I was, and people pointed me to the love of Jesus, and I heard the good news about Jesus for the first time in my life. And I responded to that, and I decided in that moment that I was gonna start to follow Jesus. And it changed everything. The unplanned, unexpected appearance of Jesus in my life melted away my cynicism and ignited hope in my life. But it wasn't less than a year later when I got invited to be part of a small group. And in that small group, it was called Turbo Group. This is such a funny Christian name for a small group, Turbo Group. And Turbo Group was designed to help you grow and get connected in the church and also start serving. And I'd been attending Turbo Group for 3 or 4 weeks, and about 4 weeks in, the leader of the small group wanted to lead a time of bearing one another's burdens. And so he said, hey, here's what we're gonna do. We would love to create a space for people to share what's going on in your life. If you have struggles or if you have questions or just anything in your life, we would just love for you to share, and then we can bear one another's burdens. And then you could hear the crickets. Eye contact dropped to 0%. It was as if I was in middle school ministry and I said, who wants to pray? Just everybody's eyes down, not me. Don't look at me. Or an altar call, every eye closed, every head bowed. And I decided I was going to break the silence. I had plenty to talk about. And so I just started sharing all my struggles, my addictions, my mindsets, the lies about God that I was believing, the ways that I was praying and hoping that Jesus would bring freedom and life. And as I'm sharing this, I'm seeing a lot of the guys are leaning in like, So I keep sharing. And at the end of the meeting, there's just silence. Nobody's talking. Everybody's just kind of sitting there. And I walk out of the parking lot. And the guys in the group, they all surrounded me in the parking lot. And they said, hey, Marty, come here. That was amazing. Thank you so much for sharing that. We were just talking. We all struggle with those things that you're talking about. Some of us, we have the same addictions in our life, the same struggles, the same sins that we're asking God for freedom. A lot of us have the same questions you have. Some of us, we've had similar experiences in our past growing up in church that we've been trying to deal with because we're seeing it's affecting our relationship with God and how we view him as our Father. And thank you for sharing that. And in that moment, it feels so good to be in a community like that. I thought, wow, this is great. We're experiencing life change. This is the body of Christ. And then they all got in their cars and left, and I was about to get in my car to drive off when the leader of the group said, hey, Marty, real quick, come here. Come here. I need to talk to you. Hey, you know, everything you just shared, yeah, it's kind of a problem. It's not really befitting of a Christian to think those things or have those things in your life. And people see you as a leader and an influencer. So I'm sorry, this is gonna be your last night that we're gonna let you come to group. I can't have you coming back to group anymore. In that moment, I was thinking, you're kicking me out of Turbo Group? What is this? But I've been on both ends of the spectrum. I've been in an environment where I walked into church guarded, cynical, walls up, knowing exactly what I was getting myself into. Oh, here we go again. And to have the grace of God and the love of Jesus and the love of God's people melt that away. But I've also been in environments where I opened up and I immediately regretted it. And in those moments, it's so easy for us to say, you know what? I knew it. And this is where when we're in a series called Come As You Are, I start to think of myself, if we're saying that we're a church that says to the world, come as you are, what are the implications of that for me? What happens when they show up? What happens when they walk through the door of this church or into the door of my life? How am I welcoming them? How am I representing Jesus to them? How am I gonna walk with them on this journey with them? And what I've realized is that when it comes to our relationships with people, when we say come as you are, we're doing one of two things. When people come as they are, we are either feeding their cynicism or surprising them with hope. And that's it. We're either feeding the cynicism they already have. Oh, I thought that when I showed up to church, I would just be judged and labeled and left out, and there'd just be a bunch of super Christians, and that's exactly what it was, which is why I didn't want to go to church in the first place. And we just feed that cynicism. Or people show up and they're surprised by the grace of God. People were so loving. They were so welcome. They told me I belonged before I believed. They welcomed me into their life. They pointed me to Jesus. It was like a family. And this is what the church should be. See, we read that God so loved the world, he gave his only son, that whoever would believe in him wouldn't perish but have everlasting life. And that God didn't send his son into the world to condemn the world, but that the world through him might be saved. That people come and there's no one condemning them or pointing the finger at them or casting a stone at them. They just feel the love and the grace and the acceptance of Jesus Christ. And that's what gets me so excited, that you are that church. You are the hands and feet of Jesus. You are the ones who represent Jesus as the hands and the feet of Christ to this world. In the same way that Jesus showed up unannounced in Thomas's life, you can show up in people's life with hands open and say, come explore your questions. Come explore your cynicisms. Come messy. Come hurt. Come with the past. Just come as you are. We love you. We're for you. Jesus has plans and purposes for your life. You can come as you are. This is what it means to be the church. So how are we continuing to come as we are? And how are we helping people come as they are? To continue to come as you are, I think this means that when we're hesitant to open up, that we would begin to believe the best. We would believe the best and open our life to other people, knowing that in doing that, in opening up, we give people the power to hurt us. I'm opening up and I'm trusting you and I'm putting my heart in your hands. I could very easily regret this decision, but I'm gonna believe the best and do it anyway because I wanna be the change that I wanna see in the world and in this church and in this community. And if I'm saying I believe that people should come as they are, I wanna be a part of that. Knowing that even if people do hurt you, God is for you and this church is for you and we will surround you and walk through that with you, that you have a place here at this table with one another. And then to help people come as they are. I can say for all eternity that Jesus invites people to come as they are, but what am I doing to represent Jesus to this world when people actually do? You are the way that God wants to satisfy people's cynicism and surprise them with hope. You are the hands and feet of Jesus.